Hi, this is Bill Arnold. Missed a show or need me talking to help you sleep tonight? I have several solutions to that situation. Here are the podcasts from the show. You are the best for listening and supporting Faith Radio. Welcome to Afternoons with Bill Arnold. I'm the Bill Arnold part of that short sentence. It's going to be a wonderful hour coming up because we're going to be back on our prayer series. Dr. Peter Kapsner and myself, or Dr. Peter Kapsner and I think that's more grammatically correct, will be in the host chair today. And we've got our very special guest, Dave Johnson. We're going to bring him on in just a minute, of course, time permitting.
Yeah, absolutely.
He might not even make it.
Yeah, well, we'll have to see. We seemed like we were talking to him just a minute ago, but you just never know how this is going to go out.
Well, you know, we start our opening banter, and
we do.
If that goes really well, maybe we don't have time
for
Dave.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, you know, Dave has some pretty good material, but I mean, second chair to us.
Because I haven't seen you in a while.
It has been.
This is Happy New Year.
Yeah.
So it's our first episode back in 2021, and we're back on our prayer series, which will continue for a while. And sometimes it takes prayer to change everything.
You know, it does. And gosh, yeah, kidding aside, I mean, do we not need prayer more than ever,
just even
at the events of today, right? I wouldn't have woken up anticipating what was going to happen in the Capitol and what we see there and how do we process that as Christians. And it does just calls to mind some of the many questions I have about prayer. Like, what would my prayer in some anonymous corner of Minnesota do or even affect in any way, shape, or form the events of the Capitol? I think these are the kinds of questions long-term believers wrestle with in terms of their prayer life. What does it really matter? What do we do? How do we intercede? How do these things work within God's kingdom?
Mm-hmm. So we want to ask, Lord, teach us how to pray, and we're going to continue to talk about prayer. And Dave Johnson is a friend of yours, Peter, and I think you could probably do a better job of introducing him and bringing him onto the show.
Yeah, Dave is a senior pastor for the better part of 38 years at a local, relatively large church here in the Minneapolis area called Church of the Open Door. I met Dave, I want to say, about 31 years ago when I was 19 years old and really sort of in pieces in my faith. I had been a Christian ever since I was a kid, and yet there were some events in my own life that had caused me to question a lot of what may or may not be true about Christianity. And my brother invited me to his church, and there's Dave, among other people in that church, really carved out a different path of Christian faith, of Christian life, Christian discipleship that really became real more than anything else. And it didn't feel like a game anymore. I felt like I was getting tapped in to sort of the story of our faith. And so all of these many years later, I'm really grateful that he's got his ministry going on post-life as a senior pastor called Things That Will Remain. And Dave has always been really interested in those things that matter from an eternal standpoint.
Yeah, when you hear Dave preach, you experience Dave.
You do.
It's powerful.
And when Dave first started, it was about an hour and a half, I think, in a sweaty gymnasium of about 6,000 people. And he had a way of being able to do three services in that time. And I worked in kids ministry for a little while, and it always drove us nuts, right? Because we thought, well, the kids are probably going to get dismissed soon, but then Dave would at least have 14 more points to work through. So no, it was incredible stuff and really life-changing on so many different levels.
Well, I'm excited to bring him on, Peter. Let's bring him on. So you go ahead.
Oh, hey, Dave. I've probably been listening in. I guess that's all we got. So we can bring you in now.
Yeah. I love hearing you talk about me when I can't respond or, you know, rebut. I did not go an hour and a half. The service was an hour and a half, but it wasn't only.
It was great. But, you know, and that was a time in your life too, Dave, right, where there are so many ways in which you grew up in the faith and some of these topics like prayer that, you know, maybe just don't get mined into all of that much. We know we're supposed to pray, but I know even in that season of your life, you had questioned a lot of things about Christianity and we're carving out a new pathway even on that topic.
Oh, absolutely. Just that topic of prayer, that journey.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my mind just is kind of bouncing all over, even the way you guys started talking about the events of the day. And if anything would call us to pray, it would be these things. But I think many of us would think, how can I pray to make things change? How can I pray to, what am I supposed to do? And I would be praying, God, help me see what's really going on here. What are the real issues? What are you up to? What are you saying? Things like that. My prayer journey, I told you guys the story I could start with, so I will, but it was early in the ministry, and it's very telling, this story. I was 27 years old, brand new at Open Door, and I was at my first national convention for our denomination. So I'm there and wanting to meet all these people. And the keynote speaker was a nationally known guy. I'm not going to mention his name, but he talked about prayer. I'll never forget it. It was great. But it wasn't ordinary, everyday kind of, you know, Dave Johnson prayer. You know, it's boring and ineffective. He was, yes, I know. But he was a fervent, persistent, stay up all night kind of prayer, the kind of prayer when Elijah prayed for rain, it rained. When he prayed for it stopped because the fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. And that was kind of the theme of the week. And I was just inspired by everything he said. And with all this stay up all night kind of praying that was persistent and fervent, he was noting almost every night Jesus' rebuke of the disciples who in the Garden of Gethsemane, you remember this story, could you not tarry 1 hour? Okay, and so like, oh, shame on you because you couldn't do that. So he challenged us to pray. And because the fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much, and I wasn't all that sure about how righteous I was, but fervency, I had that down. I was nothing if not fervent. So I found this guy that I had just met named Bruce. I just remember that name, haven't talked to him since. Great guy, another young pastor trying to serve God and do the right thing, and said, man, are you up for it? I'm up. So we decided we're going to stay up and pray all night. Fervently and passionately and earnestly. And we did. We told our wives. I don't remember what they did, but we got into this room alone, knelt down by a bed, had some water, and started praying fervently, passionately, eagerly. And we did that for 2 hours. And it was very disappointing. I will say that we did it more. We lasted longer than the disciples because they couldn't do one. So we had them beat. But here's what happened. I'll never forget it. We couldn't have been more sincere. But we just ran out of things to say because that's what prayer's about, what you say, and saying it the right way and saying it's the perfect way. And we ran out of things to rebuke and to claim and to confess. And it took a while for me to take a step back from that and think about how that kind of praying, that experience, sincere as it was, and then how awkward it was to come back to our wives and go, we're done. you know, anyway, but it reveals some things. It paints a fascinating picture, at least, of what I thought prayer was, because it's kind of like a wrestling match. Or it's kind of like a marathon. It's certainly a strain where you're trying to get something from God that he seems somehow reluctant to give, unless you say it loud enough and long enough and sincerely enough and fervently enough. So we, what I remember most was we filled the air with words. And as a kid growing up in church, we would have prayer meeting on Wednesday nights and people would, and some was really good, but people would fill the air with words. And not that we shouldn't speak out loud and all that, but it was all about not just the words, but saying the right words in the right way. And if we said the right words in the right way, loud enough, long enough, fervently, sincerely enough, maybe we'll get from God what we want. And let me be clear about this. I think there is something about fervent prayer and staying with the prayer. And I have been up all night at times, but not making speeches to God. I've been all, when I was up all night and have been up all night in prayer, it's because I couldn't go to sleep. Like I couldn't stay awake when I was trying really hard to pray this for. But there have been times when God called me to things that kept me up. And I think there's a lot of people who know exactly what that is. And we don't necessarily kind of put that in the category of deep prayer. You were in agony, maybe in prayer. I'm fascinated by the fact that I think we all know this part of Jesus' story was that sometimes the most awkward times, like when the crowd was still there and wanted more, the ministry wasn't over, people still wanted something from him, he would withdraw from the multitude, go to a solitary place, and then it would say to pray. And I'm just fascinated. Like, what do we think that meant? Like, what did he do when he was praying? Did he stay up all night talking? I just made Jesus sound like an idiot. But I think what I've kind of come to, and what I invite people into, is considering that there's kind of life of prayer that has that involves far less words. And I'm not down on words. You know what? I have little grandkids. We have a little 7-year-old daughter, and I think this is a good illustration. And when I'm with this little girl named Hallie Bean, she never stops talking. And you know what? I delight in it. I hope she never stops talking. But she's an idiot. There's going to come a time in her life when she realizes, you know what, Papa, I'm going to shut up and maybe ask you some questions. And I think that's an interesting, I hope, lovable parable of how we talk to God. And I think there is something, I think Foster calls it simple prayer, where we just talk. Talk. And I sound like I'm making fun of that. I'm telling you that monologue we have with God, that's great. It's simple. I think God delights in hearing. You know what? Just like my granddaughter probably needs to know I delight in hearing her voice, we need to know that God delights in hearing our voice. But there comes a time when I think prayer is really way more about learning how to listen than talk. Matthew 6, Peter, I think you brought this up, that Jesus said, the disciples came to Jesus and said, among other things, teach us how to pray. Whenever I talk about this, one of the things I point out is that's a question we'd expect them to ask because they're disciples. But what we don't always factor in is that these guys weren't neophytes when it came to a prayer life. They had a prayer life. They were Torah observant Jews. They observed fixed hours of prayer 7 times a day, Orthodox Jews in Jesus' day. And Jesus did this, by the way. Might freak some of us Baptists out a little bit, but they would stop. And what a fabulous practice to stop at certain points of the day, and they would recite the Shema, Hear, O Israel, Lord our God is one, and love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind. And yes, that could become meaningless repetition, but just think about 4 times a day, you stop, 7 times a day, you stop, and you just go, wait, I need to get recentered. This is my center. This is my life. And I will love the Lord of that. And so they had a prayer life. In Acts chapter 3, when Peter and John, this is after Pentecost, they healed this lame guy. And anecdotally in the text, it says they were going to the temple at the 3rd hour of prayer. Meaning what? They went to the temple every day at that time. So they had a prayer life is what I'm saying. But when they asked Jesus teach us to pray, they saw something different than fixed hours of prayer, disciplined prayer, nothing wrong with that kind of prayer. And I think their request was really this. And because this is what they noticed, Lord, teach us how to be with God the way we see you. Wow. Be with God in prayer.
And take a little break. Dave Johnson's our guest. Yep. We're going to continue our prayer series. Peter Kapsner and I will be back in just 90 seconds. Let us pray. We're praying today. Peter Kapsner and I are talking to Dave Johnson. Off to a great start, Peter.
Yeah, it was great stuff. Is that new bumper music, though, by the way, for 2021?
Yeah, of course
I have not
it
heard
is.
That bumper music
yeah.
before. That's
yeah.
pretty solid.
Thank you so
yeah.
much.
No, it was great stuff to get Dave get started. I think it's pretty compelling, the idea that we so often think about prayer as that which we say to God or make requests or pray fervently, as he said. But I'm pretty intrigued, Bill, by this idea of what does it mean to move from a life of prayer, not where we stop using our words, but what does it mean to sort of be in God's presence and to start being a little bit quieter in our prayer life.
Mm-hmm. And to do some more listening.
Yeah, mm-hmm. indeed. And Dave, you referenced that a bit. I mean, what was that sort of move like in your life to move from a life of prayer where you did a lot of speaking to just more sitting back and listening?
Sure. There's a couple of places I could go, but even as you tee it up there, the picture I have is, again, in Matthew 6, where Jesus says this thing about prayer. When you pray, go to your inner room and close the door. And a lot of people have thoughts about what the inner room is, and I remember thinking, well, can you do that in the bathroom? Is that your inner room? As if it were a room in a house. And and I am getting to the intimacy part here and how we learn to listen. But I think the inner room is, the ancients actually had a perception of the human personality as being structured actually like the physical temple in Jerusalem. And the temple was structured this way. The outer court, as you probably know, was the courtyard of the Gentiles. That's where Jesus, you know, turned over the tables. But the courtyard of the Gentiles was called that because everybody was there, even Gentiles. So the courtyard of the Gentiles, if our body, as it were like a temple or a personality, our courtyard of the Gentiles is where we do life, out there where everything is. It's noisy, chaotic. It's where we do our job. It's where we interact with people. It's where we try to find our way. It's what I would call the circumference of our lives. Inside of that court, in the actual temple, was only Jews. Inside of that was only men. Inside of that was only priests. So you got to the very core, the center of the temple, which was called the Holy of Holies. And then Paul takes this metaphor and says, don't you know that you are the temple? Wait. And, well, I think he's borrowing there from some ancient understanding of the human personality. And it's a radical thing to be saying, don't you know that you are the temple? Meaning I have an outer court to my life. I have the circumference of my life. And inside of that are fewer people that I only invite. And inside of that are even fewer who I feel really safe with. And inside of that are one or two, maybe my wife and another person or so who I'm absolutely safe with. And inside of that is me and you. Paul called it the mystery of the gospel, Christ in you, at the center of you. And here's what I contend, that inner room inside of us where Christ by his spirit dwells is a place that we don't always have easy access to, in part because we get stuck. And this is not because we're bad, it's because we're human. We get stuck on the circumference of our lives out in the courtyard of the Gentiles. I can feel the energy, hustle, bustle, busy, keeping up, doing my career, hoping I look good, all and I've not developed the practices I need to stop and go, wait, I actually need to disengage from this craziness on the circumference of my life, because I have to live out there, and so do you. But what are practices that would help me disengage from that and find my center? I've taught this a lot, but this really came to me, and I got a picture of it just several years ago, going through some real interesting things and difficult things with our kids, and one of my sons was going through some real hard things in his marriage, and there was just some pressure. And to all this craziness in our life, my dear wife, who never does this kind of stuff, added a puppy. That mix. She's trying to kill me, and what happened was I didn't react real well. I didn't react real well to that. I want to kill that thing. but here's the picture I got of myself. So actually, I did become aware of how, like, I really did want to kill it. And I go, no, I need to go away. I went to Potsdam Terrace for 3 days. And about the second day, I got this picture of me, and there's like this circle, and I'm a stick figure on the top of the circle. In the middle of the circle is a dot. That's my center. And on the outside of that circle, living on the circumference of my life, I'll say this about me, but I know it's true of both you guys. I do pretty well out there on the circumference of my life. So do you. I am competent. I'm okay. I do, blah, blah. And you know what? Even when the wind blows out there and a storm comes, I'm not particularly good when the storm comes because I just plant my feet and lean in. And then I get stuck out there. And I'm totally disconnected from my center. And my center, when I talk about finding your center, I'm not looking for me. I need to find myself inside. No, I need more of me. I got enough of me. Christ in you. Christ in you. There is another Lian Ping. There is another who lives in you. And so I think my journey, Peter and Bill, around some of this less worse thing was realizing that there really were practices, silence, solitude being two obvious ones, that could help me return on a regular basis to that center where Christ is in me. And when I get there, I'm quiet. In fact, I feel stupid talking sometimes as if I'm informing him of something he doesn't know. Romans 8:26 is a big one too for me. Paul says, and this is a fascinating thing to say about prayer. We do not know how to pray as we ought. Okay, stop right there. If I was a preacher, I'd go, stop right there. Well, I am a preacher. So I said, stop right there. the key to prayer is knowing that you don't know how. Particularly, I would add, when you're facing unfixables. Okay, let's talk about the news tonight that I don't even know about yet. I mean, I've heard something's going on. Okay, some unfixables. Well, you don't know how to pray. But the Spirit does, he goes on to say, and always is interceding for you. Okay, let me flesh that out in a real life way for me. When my several years ago, my son, I talked about the difficulty in his marriage. He was going through what ended up being a divorce. And it was a very painful time for our family and for him. And I prayed and I didn't know how to pray. I didn't know what his wife needed. I didn't know how to pray for him. But I developed this practice of literally, and it was born in this verse. I would literally practice seeing my son, Caleb. I'd be in the quiet and I would see him in the presence of God. And I would say, Lord, in your mercy, here he is. I don't know what he needs. I don't know how to fix it, but you do. So I do not know how to pray. So I'm going to picture my son in the presence of the Spirit who always is praying. I don't know how to pray, but the Spirit does and always is interceding for you. And I did the same thing with his wife who became his ex-wife. Lord, I don't know how to pray for her. And there's things, you know, I'd like to do to her. but I would bring her into this holy place. And I don't know a safer place to bring people. And I didn't talk a lot, spent a lot of time in those places. And I heard things, though. You know, we talked about hearing words from God. I would begin to hear things in those quiet spaces.
Yeah. So, Dave, I want to pick up after the break and hear more about the kinds of quiet you were hearing when you are being quiet with the Lord. This picture of taking your son right into the presence of the Lord and saying, I don't know what he needs. Such a beautiful image. I'm going to chew on that over the break. Dave Johnson is our guest. We're in our prayer series. Peter Capster and I will be right back.
It's the Afternoon Show with Bill Arnold. Let's get it started. Jump in your car. Yeah. What's for dinner? Hey. It's the Afternoon Show with Bill Arnold.
We're talking about prayer. It is Wednesday, and our prayer series continues. Peter Capster and I are talking to Dave Johnson. We're having some pretty eye-opening talk and discussions and images, and so far so good. Peter, you got a question for Dave?
Well, yeah, Dave, I would love for you to get in that a little bit more, just about bringing people, our loved ones, people we care about, the unfixables of our lives. I know that you're dealing with an unfixable as well right now, but a couple different things about this. One, I'm really moved by the idea that you were bringing your son, but not just your son, you're ultimately his ex-wife, into the same presence where the Spirit was dwelling to pray for both of them, even though it was a very contentious situation. So I guess start with that, but then we can move into some other unfixables, because I'm sure many of us can identify and are familiar with that idea of the unfixables in our lives.
Well, thanks, Peter. I think that what occurs to me around a lot of our praying and the solace I got when I was able to bring, and I do that, it's kind of a practice now of that picture. It's not hard to, I mean, both of you guys indicated that you could see that it moved you to bring those kind of principles into the presence with faith that even though you don't know how to pray, the Spirit doesn't always will. And always is interceding. I think we would do well to do some personal work around how much we are in our prayer life really dependent on and moving towards certain outcomes that we think have to be. And I would appeal to, you know, the outcomes that you think have to be that you don't know what they have to be. You don't. And neither do I. And so I think there's kind of a confrontation on our demand for certain outcomes when we have the courage to quiet it down and bring people into the presence and believe that God is interceding in ways that I don't understand. I think another thing that occurred to me during the break actually was, and this becomes very like today, because when I'm done with this call, I'm going to go and watch the news that I've been hearing bits and pieces of something's going. We live in a very noisy world, guys. News flash. And, you know, and a lot, there are many voices, and all of them are screaming. Some of them are religious voices, and all of them are pushing and pulling and inviting us to follow. And you're just a fascinating question in the middle of all the voices in the loud world we live in as believers. Our desire is to hear the one voice. So how do I hear the one voice? With all the voices telling me what I'm supposed to think and care about and how do I hear the one? At some point, this is so simple in some ways, it seems like we got to turn down the volume. If we're going to hear the one as believers, we're going to have to turn down the volume. And I had a therapist friend recently tell me that he was with this couple, and I'm not even going to mention the network, but if I'm not going to keep doing therapy with you unless you quit listening to the news, we're done. Because that voice is so loud and so confusing to you. You have no ability to hear the voice until you turn down the volume. Cornelius Plantinga did a article for Christianity Today a while ago, talked about that it's almost like we're afraid of the silence, and so we smother it with noise. We bring boom boxes to the ocean so we don't have to hear the crashing of the ocean. And I'm just telling you, if there was anything more practical, when we've invited people at Open Door over the years into practices of silence and solitude, you know, trust me, I'm among the most resistant to that whole thing. I'm ADD off the charts, sitting still as if that's some spiritual thing in and of itself is baloney. But holy moly, I remember with my son even suggesting once, you know, Dad, I don't ever have a time that it's quiet. When we'll turn off the radio when you're in your car, give it 5 minutes. Just give it 5 minutes. I think I could go off on the silence thing because I think that sometimes when we're quiet, I think the fearful thing about silence is what will I hear? Just heard from so many people when I'm going to do it, Dave. I'll do 10 minutes. I'll do 5 minutes of silence. And he goes, yeah, I heard a voice. It was a condemning voice. And wow, okay, let's work through why it is that when you're silent, you hear a condemning voice, because that isn't God's voice. It's God's voice. So let's work through that. And then begin to be trained, as it were, to hear the voice, to discern the movements, to understand the difference between a religious voice and a spiritual, godly, Jesus voice. And one more story quick comes to me. It's out of 1 Kings 17, Elijah. In fact, Elijah was the guy that James was talking about and that speaker was talking about at the conference, who was the fervent prayer, who when he prayed for rain, it rained, and all that kind of stuff. Well, here's the thing about Elijah. He didn't pray. His prayer didn't make it rain. He prayed for 3.5 years. He, in fact, in 1 Kings 17, it says he took his stand before the Lord, which sounds like I'm on God's side. The word literally there means he arranged his life around God. And so for 3.5 years, he prayed for rain, prayed for rain. And then when it was about to rain, he noticed. He heard. He didn't make it rain because he prayed. He noticed when it was going to rain because he had arranged. So when the Spirit moved, he noticed it moved. When the voice of God came, he heard that voice because he had turned out the other voices. Goofy illustration of that I think is great. My brother is the football coach at Bethel. He's been there 30-some years, and proud of him and blah, blah, blah. A couple years ago, I was on the sidelines with him at a Hamlin game. And I try to leave him alone, but they were winning big. And he whispers at me, he goes, "Dave, next play is a 43-counter dive." I go, "Okay." And he says, "And we're going to score." Okay, whatever. And they scored. And here's my question. How do you know? I know how he knows. Because arranging your life around football might be stupid to some. I know how he knew that they would score on that play and why they wouldn't score in other plays, because he had arranged his life around this game and he knew how tendencies were, and he knew when they move over here, it's going to be open over here. And when he called the 43 counter dive, he knew they were going to score. And I think that may be weird, but I'm telling you, there are ways to arrange our lives around the Lord, turn down the volume, so when God moves, you know it's him. And I wish there were more people like that. Is all. And they would quit talking and turn down the volume and listen. But I would also say this. There are people like that. And you know what I'm going to say, too? You know who they are. Think about it. You do. I'm thinking of people right now who I know they know how to listen. They hear. They discern the movements. No. That's just something everybody over there is all excited about. That's not a movement. This is over here. Is a movement of God because they've arranged their life around God. Anyway.
I like that. Dave, I have a question. What is it like? What is your prayer life like when you are in the middle of dealing with a health issue or a health crisis?
Oh, please, make it better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, tell our listeners what you know about this.
Okay. Sure. Yeah, I was just after I left Open Door. Can't remember the date. I'd been having problems with my breathing for a while, but I got diagnosed with a thing called IPF, idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis. Idiopathic is a word that means unknown cause. Pulmonary has to do with lungs. Fibrosis has to do with scarring. And the reason I got diagnosed was because of my symptoms, but I actually got diagnosed fairly early in the process because my father some years ago died of this. About a year and a half ago, my sister, older sister, died of this, and I have another older sister who's at the pretty extreme stages of this and kind of going through it. She's kind of near the end on oxygen all the time. So, about a year and a half ago or whenever it was, I got that diagnosis. And actually, at the beginning, it was kind of a relief because somebody finally named it. No, you don't have exercise-induced asthma. You have this thing. But, you know, then you start sinking in. And the other thing is it's incurable. There is no cure. It's progressive. And when we got on the website, if you did it today, they say you have two to five years to live. And I'm not living under that kind of death sentence. They were able to, because of my family history in this, they were able to diagnose it sooner, which doesn't mean I'm not going to, you know, it's not going to get worse. It just means that I'm not as far along as people generally are when they say you have 2 to 5 years. So that's pretty much the picture. But what, getting back to the prayer life, like how do you pray when you're in something like this? And it, without going into detail, like, well, on Monday I pray like this, and on Tuesday, and I know you weren't asking. But I honestly, this one thing that has guided me, and Peter has heard me say this more than once, another simple thing, but I think we have to come to God the way we are, not the way we ought to be, and not the way we wish we were. Come to God the way you are. And I feel enormous freedom to come to God the way I am. And sometimes that's scary. Sometimes that's grateful. Sometimes that's sad. I mean, I was in that song that Billy Graham used to sing, and we sang it every Sunday at church. I got so sick of it, Just As I Am. I love that. Right? Just As I Am. But think about that. In the morning, by yourself, just as I am, without one plea, but that thy blood was shed for me, and that you bid me come to thee, O Lamb of God, I come just as I am. Again today. Every day. I come again today. And so that's why I pray. I pray just as I am. Sometimes sad, sometimes yeah, grateful. You guys, I'm surprised. I'm not a generally grateful person. I'm pretty grumpy, actually.
You sound incredibly cheerful. You sound very cheerful, though, Dave. You sound very cheerful on the air, very positive, very optimistic. So you're fooling all of us.
No, well, I am grateful, and I like having fun. I mean, you guys are fun. You really are. And I don't think I could do this kind of thing without, you know, I think we need to take God real serious, ourselves not so much, and so the cheerfulness and the humor is just like, maybe it is a coping mechanism, but I just totally enjoy even being able to be like that with you guys. But I am, surprisingly for me, really grateful. Just, I'm just grateful for, yeah. We're learning new ways to be with each other as a couple, my wife and I, and just new kinds of intimacies and anyway.
All right, let me take one last break. Dave Johnson is our guest. Prayer Series Wednesday, here we are. Peter Kapsner and I will be right back. We're back with Prayer Series. Peter Kapsner and I have Dave Johnson as our guest, and we decided we're going to try to dial back the fun this last segment. But, Dave, let's talk a little bit about how you go from being the one speaking to God to maybe the one who is trying to seek his face, listen to him, and become that unshakable person over time.
Well, I think maybe the key there is over time.
Mm-hmm.
I think it has to do with learning some of these practices. I think it has to do with unshakable is a bit strong. I don't know that I would put myself in the unshakable category. But I think it's important to know that there are ways to learn. I mean, I just kind of use that phrase around Elijah. He arranged his life around God. Maybe that's a conversation in and of itself. What would that look like? What does that practically mean to arrange my life around God? Well, I talked earlier about the fixed hours of prayer that the disciples and as Torah observant Jews, they would have participated in, and Jesus would have. I mean, that's a that can be something that would turn into what we would call, and Jesus would call, meaningless repetition. But what are the sacred structures that you have that can turn? Okay, that's a whole nother talk. Because for me, those things became legal. I grew up in very legalistic kinds of environments where we proved how spiritual we were by how long we prayed, and you don't get any points for that. But what are the structures that give God access to you? Do you even, I would, it's more like I would tend to ask people questions. What are the things that you do that when you do them or don't do them, you open yourself to God? Okay, I'll give you an example of one thing. We're talking about silence and solitude, and with that comes this, you know, you're supposed to be quiet and sit still, and I really am this ADHD guy. I hit the wall in a pretty big way about 27 years ago, almost thought I was going to leave the ministry, and I became really interested all of a sudden in practices that would help me get centered and things like that, but I just couldn't sit still. And I remember being on a Stairmaster this one day, because I worked out like a maniac, and I'm on the Stairmaster, and I'm going, and I start talking to God on the Stairmaster. And I'm saying, God, I like being with you, but I can't sit still. I like to run. right? I want to go run. And as clear as I've heard anything, and I don't hear voices, but as clear as I've ever heard him say anything, he said, I'll run with you. I'll run with you. So, I mean, it sounds like a little. It's such a subtle thing, because all of a sudden I'm going, wait, don't put the AirPods in then this time. Or just have it be soft music, but consciously, intentionally become aware of the fact that there's another lives in me. But you know, you don't get extra points just because you can sit still. I can do it now because I'm old. But, yeah, I'm trying to not confuse fatigue with sanctification. and I just think, I mean, I actually said something there that's significant, because I think it really is important to discover what is our way of being with God. Don't do things because you think that in and of itself that spiritual practice makes you spiritual. If it doesn't open you to God, stop doing it. What does? I do think there are some kind of tried and true ones, that thing about turning down the volume. However you do that, I think you should do it. That kind of thing. And over time, Bill, when you talked about, you know, this becoming this rock of a person, as it were, over the long haul, I do put a lot of stock on. I love Eugene Peterson's say, he has this phrase called a long obedience in the same direction. And, you know, we all get lost from time to time. I talk about my analogy for sheep that get lost. I'm like a sheep, you are too. Sheep don't leave the shepherd because they're mad at the shepherd. You know, I don't look, I'm mad at the shepherd. You're not rebellious. We're stupid. We wander from the shepherd because we're stupid. We smelled something good, you know, a career. We smelled something good that was not good for us, maybe. And we just started following the smell, and all of a sudden we don't know how to get home. Mm-hmm. And a long obedience in the same direction would be acknowledging that sometimes I smelled something and I got off course, and now I'm back, and now it's a long, we'll keep coming back. We'll keep coming back. And anyway.
Yeah, and Dave, you know, just in light of that too, we talk about Jesus being the good shepherd in this situation. We just have a couple minutes left here, and you talk about you're not necessarily hearing a voice, like an audible voice of some kind, when you are turning down the volume in whatever way that you do that. But can you speak to a bit about over time being able to learn to distinguish from the voices of this world from the singular voice of the shepherd?
Yeah. Well, the scriptures talk about that still small voice. That might be a little vague. Paul talks in 1 Corinthians about being taught by the Spirit. And I think there are people who that you over time, you begin to discern, I think, if you spend enough time in the quiet. And by the way, you can never, this is not a do-it-yourself thing. This is not something you do by yourself. Okay, Peter, I'm going to mention a name that you know, and is it okay to say the name of Vicki Degner?
I think you might have just did it.
I said it.
Yes.
Well, anybody who knows Vicki, and a lot of people know Vicki, she's the kind of person that when I'm wondering, am I hearing, I've got this instinct, I've got this sense, I've got this intuition. I'm not sure it's God, to seek out other people who, you know, have been listening for a very long time. We've lost, you know, Paul said this fascinating thing, 1 Corinthians 6:7, it's in there somewhere. he said, we have many teachers, but we have not many fathers. So when I laid that over the church, even, you know, we have many teachers, I think the last thing the church needs these days is another CEO, pastor, not that that's an evil thing, but a father, a spiritual father is, that's who Vicki Degner is. That's the person that you want to go to. And the reason you want to go to them is not because they know the Greek. It's because they've learned to hear the voice and they can help you hear it. Remember what Mary did when she heard the message from the angel, and she was scared. She didn't go, wow, that's awesome, I'm blessed, and the fruit of my womb is blessed. She was quite disturbed. Guess, remember what she did? She made a beeline for Elizabeth, an older woman, wasn't her mother. It was her cousin, actually, who, and all the metaphors here are just crazy for me, because she was pregnant supernaturally with John the Baptist. We'll take it out of the pregnancy and make it a symbolic thing. Elizabeth knew what it felt like and what it meant to have the life of God, something born of God, being grown, growing in her. It happened to be John. And so when Mary came, guess what? The life of God that was growing, born of God, that was growing in Elizabeth leapt. You know what it means? It means that the life of God in Elizabeth spotted the life of God in Mary and called it out. Oh, wait, Mary, don't be scared anymore. No. Don't wonder anymore if this is a good thing or a God thing. Blessed are you. Because someone in whom the life of God is growing and being formed is able to see it in other people. And, that's how we make our way. That's how. You don't do this by yourself, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And there are people who've done it and do it, and none of it's perfectly done ever. And my famous tagline on all of these things, Peter, you know this, is blah, blah, blah.
But Dave, it's been just great having you on the show. Thank you for sharing so much about prayer and insights that I'm going to chew on a whole bunch tonight. I'm looking forward to taking prayer requests into the presence of God and saying, here they are.
Yeah, it's a real simple thing, right? I mean, it's something that I think we all can do, listening, talking, wherever we are with this, is just those people that we care about, the events in this world that we care about, the things that we feel, I think, so disempowered by and don't really know what to do to take those unfixables right into God's presence. We can all do that as believers together tonight.
Yep. Be fascinating even to just even journal your, like what kind of bubbles up out of that. But thanks for inviting me on.
I don't really want to have homework.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. Thanks That's again, Dave.
Yeah,
appreciate you very much. Yeah.
I'm delighted.
Yeah.
Thank you. You bet.
Talk to you soon.
All right, Peter, thanks again for another great prayer series.
Yeah, it really brought us in an interesting direction, right? I mean, it's been an incredible series up till now with some of the different people speaking into it. And I think Dave just brought us into a different place, a different, richer, kind of broader understanding of the whole thing.
And not to tease listeners, but January 27th, our guest will be Ann Graham Lotz.
Indeed, yeah.
So that'll be fun.
I know, right?
She's a prayer warrior.
Well, and I know for you and me, too, this helps us grow. This isn't just like being on air talking to people. This helps us grow in our faith, too. And I think our listeners are saying the same sort of thing.
A lot. Thanks for listening today. I enjoyed being with you, and I hope you have a great night. Sleep well, and I'll see you tomorrow. We've got a great show planned for you tomorrow. Guy Talk is going to start things off. See you tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.